Welcome into another edition of the Dan and Victory Podcast, only on MusketeerReport.com. I'm Rick. He is Dan. And Dan, this is the 41st podcast, and I think it's pretty obvious who we will be naming this one after.
Adam Simons. I was going to let you do the honors, Rick.
Adam Simons, right?
I mean, has there been a better 7'2" guy that never saw the floor at Xavier? I think not. It's the dude with the two rings, right?
Oh, Posey, I guess. Yeah, I guess he's had a decent career.
So, Rick, we are we're recording this on Monday night, January the 13th. Since the last time we spoke, the Musketeers have played three games. On Saturday, January the 4th, they beat Butler at Cintas Center 79-68. They turned around on Thursday late night again at Cintas and finished off a four-game home sweep over the holiday period, beating Marquette 86-79. And then on Sunday, they traveled to play nationally ranked and all-around awesome Creighton on the road, probably the toughest road trip of the Big East schedule. And you know what? They lost 95-89, but as we'll talk about a little bit later, I think it's a game that they can walk away from with heads held high. Muskies 13-4. They're 3-1 in the Big East. They will play this week. They've got a Wednesday night game against Georgetown. We'll also preview on this show the Martin Luther King Day game on January the 20th against DePaul, to the extent that we need to. That's a afternoon game, by the way, for TV purposes. For those of you that are working, you may need to sneak out a little early for that. So, Rick, Muskies at 13-4, 3-1 Big East play. I guess let's go through each game, each one of those last three games in some detail and start with the Butler game. My takeaway from this was that this was a really, really good college basketball game. And really, all the last three games have all been really competitive, really compelling college basketball games. Pretty much what we hoped these Big East conference games would be like, but they're a little bit exhausting when you're used to having like a Fordham every 2 weeks to give you a breather.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think that's what we're going to see as we go on. And that's why we've been talking about these home wins are so important. The Musketeers did a great job after they got back from Atlantis of holding serve at home. Now they've gotten another important one with Georgetown. And, you know, they may be better. Obviously, Georgetown's going to be a tough opponent. But these are games, the games at home are the ones that X has to win. Because when you're playing all these tough games in a row, you got to figure that at some point, I mean, at Creighton, they didn't have it. And they still lost. But as you mentioned, that's the toughest road game probably in the Big East right now. But at one of these points, you know, one of these games, they're going to go to Providence or DePaul or somewhere and lay an egg just because they're wore down or mentally they don't have it one night. So you got to make sure you hold serve at home.
The Butler game is a perfect example of that. And this game, it was really a game of two halves. X, in the first half, had a very difficult time defending what Butler was doing offensively, not hurt by the fact that the Bulldogs were just making tough shot after tough shot. And I thought the key player for X in the first half of the Butler game was Samaje Christen, not only because he was running the offense so effectively, he had 8 assists against 0 turnovers for the game, but in that first half, I think he realized that Butler had control a little bit of the game, and Samaje really elevated his game. He took, you know, he had about a 4 or 5 possession streak there where Butler was threatening to get ahead. They were hitting a couple threes. They were hitting some tough shots. And Samaje just seemed to be in full on attack mode, really taking it to Alex Barlow, who's a decent enough ball defender, but couldn't stay in front of him. And those few possessions kept that game, you know, within a possession, within 4 points or something like that, and really allowed Xavier to remain in the game and take Butler's best shot in that first half.
The thing about Butler with that game is they did hit some tough shots, but some of them weren't necessarily tough shots, but just shots that weren't in the scouting report. You know, Kyle Marshall, for example, you force him to shoot jumpers, which is all he usually wants to do is get to the rim. So you're playing off of him a little bit because you've got to give something up if you're going to defend all the different weapons. And they decide to play off him a little bit, and he hits a couple jump shots to begin the game. And those are the type of things where, I mean, the team's beating their scouting scouting report. There's not a lot you can do about it. You may have to adjust what your original game plan was. But, I mean, at that moment, it wasn't necessarily bad defense. And on the other end of the court, Xavier started off a little slow. But, you know, I know Snow mentioned it on the message board that it was some of the best offense they were actually running was right there at the beginning of the game. And, they, you know, they just couldn't finish. But as you mentioned, that was the big thing in this first half was the way Samaje just completely took over. I mean, he's been so back and forth. He went through that period where he wasn't aggressive at all on the offensive end, and he was doing a lot of other things well. And then recently, he's really been scoring. And it seems like he's kind of finding that balance of when to be aggressive, knowing when the team needs their best player on the court to step up and take over, and when to also trust his teammates and share the ball and get everyone involved. And I think we kind of saw that starting in this Butler game, and it's really carried over the last two games, Marquette and Creighton as well. And I think we're starting to see him, he's just starting to get it. Everything's starting to click for Samaje at this point, it looks like.
Yeah, somebody on one of the message boards made the point that it looks like the game is slowing down for him, like they always say about a good NFL quarterback after a couple seasons, when they start to see the patterns and they start to anticipate play a little bit better. And certainly, as we'll talk about with the Marquette game and the Creighton game, Samaje has just been on fire the last few weeks. Rick, one big talking point from this game was, well, we'll talk about D. Davis in a second, but I thought another guy who was critical in this game for X was Matt Stainbrook. And really, it wasn't because of anything Stainbrook necessarily was doing, although he did do a really nice job of finishing his opportunities in the lane and controlling the boards. But this was a game where the teams are complete, Butler and Xavier, completely different teams in terms of skill. But I thought that this was the one glaring advantage that either team had on the other was Matt Stainbrook's size compared to the Butler big men. I mean, Eric Fromm at 6'8", 220, he's giving up 2-3 inches and 40 pounds to Stainbrook, and he was the one that drew that assignment for the most part. They put Andrew Trebats, is that, did I pronounce that right, Trebats?
I'll take it, because I didn't know how to pronounce it.
They put him on Matt a little bit, and he has a little bit more of the old man game, kind of fighting Stainbrook with his slightly smaller doppelganger, and that worked a little bit better for him in the second half, his homunculus, if you want. But the big thing for me, I thought, is that X had a huge advantage in the size inside.
Yeah,
and they really utilized that well, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it took them a little bit in that, and that's where Samaje had to carry them. They missed some shots inside that maybe they should have been finishing. But as the game wore on, it seemed like Fromm especially was just absolutely gassed trying to keep Stainbrook from sealing him low and keeping him off a spot. And I compared it to almost like NFL. You know, you look at holding up those 300-pound guys all game when you're just pushing and pushing with all your might. And that's basically what Fromm was doing. I mean, he's leaning over a forearm in Stainbrook's back, pushing with everything he has to keep him from sealing him deep underneath the basket. And by the end of the game, he was just completely dead tired. And I thought that you're right. It was a huge advantage for Xavier. And it's just, this team has a different makeup, obviously, and Stainbrook has changed it so much. And we're really starting to see the effects of that now as you get into Big East play. I mean, it was tough to really tell early on in the season when they were playing some teams that just couldn't match up physically at any position. And then they went through that stretch where they struggled a little bit. But now that as they've been on this win streak and you started to get into Big East play where they're playing good team after good team, you're really starting to see how physical and rugged the post play of this team is.
Yeah, but you have to. I actually would have to give Fromm some credit, given the physical mismatch he had, because he actually did play pretty well.
Oh, he completely battled
and did a pretty good job of fighting. But that's what you expect from a Butler team. I mean, they may be, and I think this year so far their struggles in league play, 0-4, three of those games at home. They're a little bit short physically, and I think we can talk about that a little bit later. But the big performance from X's standpoint was the play of D. Davis, who got his second foul right before the under 12 TV timeout in the first half. X kind of had to play defense by committee on Kellen Dunham for the rest of the first half. It was sporadically effective, although he did get a couple decent looks. But my goodness, in the second half, D. Davis completely powered up. He hadn't really expended any energy on the sidelines, completely rested. And pretty much from the word go, he knew what the what flavor gum Kellen Dunham was chewing, what type of deodorant he was wearing. I mean, it was one of the more impressive, both on the ball and off the ball, defensive efforts I've seen. He just absolutely locked him down, played every second of the second half, and just had Dunham in his hip pocket and held a really, really good score to just 11 points on 3 of 10 shooting.
Yeah, but the most insane part of that is the fact that Kellen Dunham is a legit 6'6". He is not a small dude. He has at least 6 full inches on D. Davis. He was giving up so much size in that matchup, and I really don't think strength necessarily, because Dunham's not really a real strong dude, and Davis now been in the system for 3 years. He's never going to be a big bulky guy, but he's wiry at this point and can hold his own. But the way he went over screens and fought on every possession, you're right, Dan. It was a phenomenal defensive performance, and it was a huge difference in the game. And all the Butler writers after the game, you should have heard them in the media room talking, even asking their questions. They're like, you know, Coach Mack, Kellen Dunham hasn't been bothered like that all year. What'd you do to him? And Mack was just like, you know, we put D. Davis on him and chased him around every screen and had a chasing mentality. And everyone was just kind of in awe of the way that he was able to bother a shooter of Dunham's caliber, who really hasn't been stifled like that much at all this year.
Well, I thought X's game plan on Dunham was really good, because Dunham, as far as I can tell, he's got two weaknesses. One is that he doesn't have a very good first step, and he can't really beat his man. And the second is he's not a very good ball handler at this stage in his career. And X in the first half, after Davis went out, they really tried to harass him a long way from the basket. They'd step out and run a double team at him 25 feet away. I know it caused a timeout one time. I think he turned the ball over once out there as well. And then in the second half, D. Davis, just every time Dunham would catch the ball, he just had no room to operate. And he just doesn't seem like a guy who can make that flash first step the way a Samaje Christen can. And actually, I mean, he's not the same type of player, but the way a McDermott can for Creighton and use that first step to get some space. Dunham almost needs to catch the ball with a little bit of a buffer zone in order to make up his mind what he wants to do. And X just did such an effective job of getting out on him and forcing the other guys on Butler's team to keep them in the game. To their credit, Butler's supporting cast really did a nice job in this game. I thought Elijah Brown in particular was very impressive, playing with a lot of confidence, stepping up and hitting a lot of shots. Shrabats, we mentioned, off the bench, coming in, giving him good minutes down low. And Kyle Marshall, who, you know, everybody knows his game. You know, he's a guy that's, as Chris Mack said, he's played in a Final Four. He's used to playing in these big games. So I actually came away from that pretty impressed with Butler, you know, taking a pretty good shot from Xavier in the first, you know, 14, 15 minutes of the second half and staying in that game, keeping it tied 2 points, 3 points down up until the last 40 seconds or so when X pulled away.
Yeah, Shabazz and Brown are going to be really good for them. The two young guys that were really impressive in that game. But if you've been watching Butler throughout Big East play, which I think just about every one of their games has been on national television, those kids can both play, and they're going to be, you know, typical Butler here again in another year with some scrappy, tough guys. And you saw that against Xavier. Those guys stepped up, even though they're young players, and they really made a difference. And as you mentioned, Fromm battled all game, and this was a battle, but this was the game that, with the history that these two teams have and it being kind of a rivalry feel to this game almost, this was the game that I was more worried about Butler coming into CentOS and winning and beating Xavier, and Xavier kind of getting caught up in that and it being that typical old Xavier Butler ugly knockdown drag out toughness battle. And I mean, Xavier completely won the fight. If it was about toughness, they definitely owned the paint and dominated on the glass. And really, the game was the exact opposite of what you would expect from Xavier and Butler. It was free flowing, good offense. Both teams made a lot of tough shots. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was a great college basketball game. But I was pretty impressed with the way that Xavier kind of seemed to be in control most of this game. I mean, we talked about how they struggled early. They never really were rattled by that. They kept to the game plan. They stayed the course, and in the second half, they were pretty much in control. And I thought that was impressive considering the way this rivalry has gone over the last several years.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, and one thing that really helped X out is that they made the most out of their opportunities at the foul line, 20 for 24, 83%. And a lot of those, I know, you know, Isaiah Fillmore had 3 of 4 down the stretch. I think Miles Davis came off the bench, hit a couple. D. Davis knocked down some. I mean, so you had everybody really pitching in. And one thing that I've always thought about free throws is you don't really need to shoot a great percentage as a team. You just need the critical guys that are going to be touching the ball and shooting a lot of them to be pretty reliable at the line. And this was a game where you saw that because Samaje, but this was a game where everybody was good. So that was a good sign. Also, X turned Butler over 15 times in this game and only turned the ball over 8 times themselves, which, you know, granted that Butler's style does not maybe lend itself to forcing a ton of turnovers, but I thought that was pretty impressive. X had 8 steals, 2 from James Farr, actually, which is a little bit of a wild stat. So, Rick, anything else you noticed from the Butler game as you try and put that into context with the last couple games?
I'd say my big takeaway from this one was the first thing we talked about, which is just the feel. And if you want to say the game slowing down from that, Samaje is just developing as the season goes along. The way last year, it's freshman season. I think the game was a little bit fast for him. He was getting a lot of charges called. He was a little out of control maybe at times going to the basket. He didn't have much help. This year, it's a completely different team. He does have the help. It took him a little bit of time to get settled into that and figure out how to both trust those guys, get them involved, but also go out and get his and be aggressive. And we're seeing that right now. And I really felt like Butler was the first game where we got to see that really come out and showed how great his feel is, because in the second half he deferred a lot to his teammates and got the ball inside and did a great job of that.
Well, and I wanted to make the point, talk a little bit about Butler. Starting out 0-4 in the Big East, you know, they've lost home games to Villanova and Georgetown, both of which are sort of understandable. Losing at home in double overtime to DePaul, a little bit less so.
Shocking, and then seeing that Butler team, by the way.
Yeah, and losing at X. But I'll tell you what, the thing that I saw from this team, I think Brandon Miller looks like he's a really good X's and O's coach. You know, there was no noticeable drop in the quality of their set plays, especially out of timeouts. They ran one double screen lob to the backside to Kyle Marshall off a sideline inbounds pass that was just like straight out of the Brad Stevens playbook. That was one of those things you watch and you say, yeah, only Butler gets that bucket. Right. But I do have a little bit of concern because it seems like they are really running into that wall, having moved up 2 significant levels of conference play in such a short period of time. And, you know, when you look at like a Creighton team that comes into the Big East, in their first season and is loaded, and can maybe create some momentum with a great season this year to keep things rolling from here. Butler kind of comes in looking like it reminds me a little bit of Xavier's first year in the A-10 where they had some young talent, but it was just obvious that the residual players on the team that were MCC Horizon League level weren't going to be able to produce at the same level. Like for example, a TJ Johnson, who was an all-league player in the MCC, but just wasn't athletic enough and didn't have the hops enough to really produce against the A-10 bigs. And I wonder if you're kind of seeing that a little bit with Butler, especially given that they're, you know, as we've talked about on the show, Blewett, McCura, they've lost some recruiting battles over the last year because of the departure of Brad Stevens. I mean, Butler's a program that's weathered coaching changes in the past and has come out of it pretty well. So I don't expect them to be down for long, but they certainly look like, of the 3 newcomers to the Big East, the one that's really struggling the most with this transition.
Well, yeah. Well, if Roosevelt Jones was on this team, though, I think they'd look a whole lot better, for one. And, you know, he got injured at the beginning of the year. They're missing him for the whole year. But if he was on this team, I think they would be a completely different team. They just don't – they're a lot like Xavier last year. Dunham's great. They have – they can usually get a second guy going, and it might be kind of a different guy every night, whether it's Elijah Brown one night or Kyle Marshall another night. Kyle Marshall's been pretty darn good all year as well.
Yeah.
But after that, they just don't have consistent weapons that are given. And if Roosevelt Jones was in that mix, I think that would give them that type of player who would be reliable, consistent, and a veteran. And I think we'd think a little bit differently. Plus, they'd be a little tougher as well. So they are down a little bit this year. But I think if you look at the freshmen that they've got right now, what they're getting out of Brown and old man Trebaz's boy, or however you say it, they're going to be all right going forward. And they don't have a great 2014 recruiting class. I mean, I like Keelan Martin. I think he's underrated. I think he's going to be a lot like Chris Jenkins that went to Villanova. So, I mean, I think they are adding a nice offensive piece that can maybe help them right away next year in Keelan Martin. So we'll see how things go. I think they're going to be all right, though.
All right. Well, moving on to Thursday's game against Marquette. This was a game that I think a lot of Xavier fans were really anticipating. Marquette and Xavier have some history together. Anytime they play, you know, you get the old guys talking about the great stories of Al McGuire getting into it with the students at Schmidt Fieldhouse. You know, there's some history from the MCC years. There's some more recent history with Marquette's win in the NCAA tournament a few years ago with Jimmy Butler locking down Tu Holloway. Rick, let's start with the coaching matchup here. Tell me about your boy Buzz Williams. What'd you think of his effort on the sidelines on Thursday?
He's a wild. Well, first of all, where do you come out? He's a wild man, but where do you come out on him? Do you like Buzz Williams or no? It seems like there's a lot of mixed opinions about him.
I think I don't mind his histrionics and so forth, but it just pisses me off when the coach is like halfway across the floor with the ball in play. It just infuriates me to no end. I just, every time it happened, I wanted to see like Samaje peel off a rebound and just run him over and see what the refs would do. But I mean, I think he's a character. I think he's good for the league, yeah. You know, and I think certainly he's been really good for that Marquette program. I think that this year they've lost a lot from last year. And I don't think that people anticipated, like the national pollsters and the opinion makers, really understood how offensively challenged, now they didn't show that Thursday, but how offensively challenged this team was going to be generally without Vander Blue.
Yeah.
And you know, they just seem to lack that guy that keys their offense. They have a nice pair of big men in Devontae Gardner and Chris Atule. That is, other than Tennessee, probably the most rugged front court Xavier will run into this season. And I think they were more than a match for Stainbrook and Fillmore in this game on Thursday. But X really dominated in the backcourt, specifically Samaje Christen, who had, I would have said it was the best game of his career until Sunday. So maybe we can talk about that. But again, slow start for X, but they stayed in it. They stayed with it. And then they had a chance to put Marquette away toward the end of the first half. They got a 6-8-point lead. They kind of let it slip a little bit. You know, another game that was tied with 5-6 minutes left, that X was able to pull out at the end, and a really impressive win. I mean, you do need to see X do this away from Cintas Center. They haven't gotten that many opportunities to do it yet. But when you see them pull out a game like this against a veteran, strong Marquette team, it definitely makes you feel like this is a team that's going places this year.
Well, first of all, you just skipped way out of the Buzz Williams conversation, but I will say I did enjoy him coming over. If you noticed, oh, that reminds me, I didn't tell my Nolan Berry story either about Butler. But if you've noticed, I've been moved down to the baseline a lot. It's a little cramped over there now that they've got the courtside seating. So the baseline deal, I actually like it. It's a lot more spacious, and the view's not bad as long as you're not like right next to the basket where D'Artagnan is, because his stupid hat gets in the way. But anyways, Buzz Williams came like right over before the game. The Blue Crew, I don't know if you've seen those guys. They paint themselves all blue and go nuts. Well, they were screaming Buzz for like a minute before tip off. So Buzz, like, instead of like, you know, turning his head or acting like he doesn't hear it, he just walks over and goes, "Hey guys, what's going on? You in school right now?" And starts up a conversation. And then, I don't know, they're talking about the holidays and some kid's mom's cooking. And like, they were in like a legit conversation for about a minute. And then he walked back over for player introductions and anthem and everything. And then later on, after a timeout, he came over to get water. And like, this was when things were like real close. His team had Xavier had just gotten an and one to push it back to like a 4-point game, I think. and he had come over, gotten a drink of water, and starts talking to the students again, like, this is a hell of a game, isn't it? And just having, like, a normal conversation. I'm just thinking, like, most coaches take themselves way too seriously in the moment, way too seriously to do something like that. Like, they'd be so mad that their players fouled on that player or whatever the case was that they would not just be that lighthearted and look up and be able to step back and say, this is a hell of a game. And it was. It was so much fun to watch, but it was cool that he just recognized that and was that personable with the student fan base. Also, I will say, going back to the Butler game, before that, so this the ginger kid in the blue crew, he's the one with the red hair, will always pick out, like, some scrub on the other team and just scream at them the entire game. And, like, no matter what it is, he'll rip on them for standing up, for cheering, whatever, just tells them to sit down and everything. So, and they usually do it pretty, they keep it, you know, pretty light and don't get too personal with it. But anyways, they're telling Nolan Berry he's ugly before the game and things like that. Nolan Berry is the guy he chose before the game. Well, Nolan Berry's mom had made the trip to Xavier for the game, and she was sitting right behind the bench. So, like, out of nowhere, you just see this older lady get up, walk straight over to the student section, and lets this kid have it, let him know that she's not going to listen to it the rest of the night. And, of course, she ended up moving by halftime, so... You know. So yeah, the student section has become a big part of my game day experience, and I'm not the old grumpy journalist guy though, Dan. I'm all for it. I'm glad that there's an atmosphere at the game. I'd much rather them be loud and give me a headache than them not come at all. So there you go.
Well, I think that's good. You know, that I think explains why Buzz Williams, you know, guys like you and me tend to give him a little bit more leeway, because I certainly prefer him to, like, the Nick Sabans of the world that just want to kill, that really love sports except for all, like, the fun parts.
Right.
So
exactly.
So I enjoy Buzz's antics a little bit. I just wish somebody would run him over with the ball. Anyway, this was a game similar to the Butler game. X lost a key contributor early in this one when Matt Stainbrook drew his second personal foul about 8 minutes into the game. And, you know, in the Butler game, X had other outside defenders that could theoretically guard Kellen Dunham, and they could put together some shifting defenses to deal with that. In this game, that's spelled trouble with Chris Atule and Devontae Gardner, who is just an absolute load and has a lot better touch than I remembered seeing from him in previous years. I thought, and as a result, X was forced to rely a lot, pretty heavily, on James Farr and on Jalen Reynolds in the first half. And I thought both of them did a really nice job. Can you comment a little bit on the big man rotation there in the first half?
Well, yeah. I mean, this was, you know, the second most physical game I've seen at CentOS this year, I think. And that's the thing. It was those two young guys holding down the fort for Xavier in the first half with Stainbrook out of the game. I mean, a lot of times they were paired with Fillmore, but either way, Xavier matched the intensity and the physicality of Devontae Gardner, by the way, listed at 290 pounds. How over under 320?
Oh, easy over. And that dude
listed at 290.
That dude takes a lot of steps when he receives the ball too. I just don't think the refs want to call a foul on him because he's so large.
Well, he's still within the circumference of his body while he's taking those steps.
He did a great job.
But no, I mean, he is.
Hey, you said it, man. I don't want to piss him off.
Yeah, he's huge. But I was really impressed with Jalen Reynolds and what he showed. James has shown us that he can at least hold his own in there this year, but he had slacked on the defensive end the last several games, and he had saw his minutes decrease because of that. Coach Mack had been playing him a little bit less and had been getting on him a little bit about his defense. I thought he responded really well in this Marquette game where he played more minutes. He was a lot more physical and did a better job of not letting guys see a limb or not getting just abused on a rebound. A lot of people see James grab all these rebounds, and he does a good job, but it's the ones where he just gets pushed underneath and gives up an easy offensive stick back, or gets bullied down low and the guy seals him too deep and gets an easy lay-in over top of him, where it really hurts. You can't just give up those easy buckets with the way Xavier plays defense. So I thought both of those two guys did a great job defensively. also, Dan, I think this is the first game, you know, we had seen it coming for a couple games. Jalen Reynolds, I'd mentioned, things had looked like they were slowing down for him. He wasn't getting enough minutes yet to really show what he could do. But I think this is the first game he got on the court for an extended period of time. He didn't foul too much. He was under control. He grabbed rebounds. He didn't fumble them out of bounds. He played sound defense. He was in the right positions. He knew his rotations. He was jumping to the ball and understood. He maintained his help responsibilities while also focusing on his tough assignment. So I thought this was a great game for Jalen as well. So big time game for the two young guys. And that was my biggest takeaway, was this is the first time they've had to rely on those guys. We didn't truly know how much depth they had. We thought, you know, if Stainbrook gets in foul trouble, how much trouble are they really going to be in? Or if Fillmore gets in foul trouble, how much trouble are they going to be in? I think they showed in that game that they can withstand it if need be.
I'm just trying to get my head around this whole circumference of his body jab. Just Devontae Gardner, if you're listening to this podcast, I just want to clarify that all those comments were made by Rick Brewering. And if you need to get a hold of him, just send, you know, send a postcard to the post office, care of the Latonia, Kentucky post office, and they'll find him.
As our guy, Ozzie Davis said courtside that game, I'm a fat guy. I know fat, like, and he's fat. Like, that's just the bottom line. He's not a fit basketball player. He's got this giant power forward frame, and then he's got a huge offensive lineman gut on top of it. I mean, he is well over three bills.
I'll tell you what, the dude played 37 minutes, and he looked in significantly better shape at the end of that game than anyone on Butler's team did on Saturday.
He's really good, too. I'm just saying, he is a huge guy, which makes it even tougher to guard him.
Rick, closing up the front court discussion, just wanted to note the 39-20 rebounding edge that X had in this game, which is absolutely crazy. You know, and everybody really chipped in. Justin Martin had 8 boards off the wing. Jalen Reynolds, 5 rebounds in just a handful of minutes. Stainbrook had 8. So a lot of guys chipping in. But wanted to talk about Samaje Christen's game. I mean, this was – we'll just when we were talking about the UC game, we talked about him stepping up when UC made their run in the second half and hitting a couple long threes with some authority. And, you know, when he did it last year, like against Purdue, I remember he had a big three in that game that sort of put the game out of reach. We said, you know, that's not really his game. He might be a guy that can hit one every once in a while, but he's not a guy you want taking those. Against Marquette, in a game where he was just brimming with confidence all the way through, knocks down 2 huge threes when Marquette had overcome a 12-point lead, tied the game with about 5 minutes left, and Samaje, actually it was about 4.5, because Samaje hit one before the TV timeout and then a second one immediately out of the TV timeout to put X up 6 points and to put them in a position from which Marquette could not recover. So, and then you add on to that the fact that he was 9-10 from the free throw line and just took care of business there, and also 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal in 35 minutes of action. So, I mean, it was just a complete game from Samaje. He also was extremely good on defense, as he's been all year, matched up against guys like Derek Wilson and Todd Mayo off the bench. So I just was really impressed with his performance in this game, and he just keeps getting better. I mean, and you definitely can see, you could always see the potential there. Now you're starting to see the realization of that potential. And that was a special game, I thought, in terms of the way he produced for the Musketeers.
Yeah, it was just absurdly efficient. And then you mentioned the clutch shots. Someone mentioned, I believe this was on Twitter, it may have been on the message board, I don't remember who it was, forgive me, but they mentioned that it was too Holloway-esque. And I hate saying things like that, but this one was one where it's like, you know, we know he's not a knockdown shooter per se, but when the game's on the line, he's starting to show that ability that he wants to step up and take over, and it doesn't matter if it's a tough three or a turnaround fadeaway off the dribble or a shot where he's got to get all the way to the rim or he's got to make 2 free throws with 4 seconds on the clock. It doesn't matter. He's showing that he steps up and makes the clutch shots, and he's been doing it all year, and this was just another case of that. By the way, back to Jalen Reynolds real quick. We set the official over-under on technicals. He got his first technical in a Xavier uniform in this game. It was a weak call, too, by the way. Basically, he kind of stepped up and maybe mouthed something after he got a block, and the guy put his hands on him, and then Jalen shoved his arm away, and they teed him up for it. So 8.5 is the official over-under for his career technicals. Where are you going?
Oh, career?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the only way that stays under.
What, you think it was a year?
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know. Maybe he turns into Rasheed Wallace in practice. I don't know. I would have to say, unless he becomes a complete monster for this summer and is gone after his sophomore year for the NBA, I would say the over is a pretty safe bet.
I'm going over, but I think he'll get exactly 9 if he stays 4 years. I think he's going to get 2 this year because I just don't think he's going to play a whole lot more to have the opportunity to get more than 1 more. And then next year, I think he'll get 3 as he plays a lot more. And then his junior year when he's a starter and Coach Mack has kind of reeled him in, I think he'll be more of a leader. I think it's back to 2, and then 2 his senior year. But I think the 2, I think at least 1 in his junior year and at least 1 is his senior year, fans will find completely unfair, and it'll be more of a reputation thing and him just being a little too over-exuberant than him actually deserving a technical. That's my prediction.
That's a very specific prediction.
Yeah, I've thought a lot about it, to be honest with you. He's a fun guy to watch. He really is.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's going to get teed up. It's not like it's a huge negative thing. It's just how he is on the court. He's going to get teed up.
I want to hit Justin Martin's performance too in this game, because it kind of set up what he was able to do in the Creighton game where he scored like crazy. 15 points on 4 of 6 twos, 1 of 3 three-point shots, made all 4 of his free throws, 8 rebounds. I mean, Justin Martin has really elevated his game, it seems to me. And this was a game where he was knocking down shots against Butler. He really didn't, but he upped his defensive effort in the second half, which I thought was huge. And then against Creighton, he was just extremely effective offensively. Are we seeing, I mean, at this point, we talked about it with Snow. Is it now safe to say the lights are on for Justin Martin and he's really starting to gear into becoming the player that we thought X was getting when he arrived?
You'd like to think so. And for his sake, you got to be happy for the guy. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of jokes and a lot of things said about Justin Martin, even on this podcast, you know, about whether he would ever get it or not trust him or, you know, his work ethic or whatever. But, I mean, he's come with a hard hat pretty much every night that Xavier's played for the last 9 or 10 games here. And he's been very good. And he's actually becoming a reliable scoring option, which is what we always thought he would be. He was never really known for his defense. As it turns out, some of his best attributes this year has been his toughness on the glass and on the defensive end, but he's also proving to be a reliable scorer. He's finally knocking down shots like Brian and I always said that he could in practice and never really showed us in games, but it's finally starting to click for him, it looks like, and you got to be happy for him after all this time that he is starting to get it together and show his potential a little bit.
All right, last thing, 9 o'clock game. You had a hot sports take on this.
Yeah, well, Mo Egger tweeted out that he loved the 9 p.m. starts. I completely agree, and here's why. I just love, you know, you're at the office. I left the office about 5:30. I went and I got my hair cut, and I went and paid a couple bills online, and got dinner. And then I went to the game at Cintas Center. Like, I had time to get things done and still go to the game. I mean, I'm going to be up till 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm sure that's where I differ. I'm single. I don't have kids. And you other people have important things to do with your lives in the mornings and things. But for me, I love the 9 o'clock starts. I just think it's nice to be able to get your work done at the office, enjoy your night, get a few things done, and then watch the game when it's late at night and you're winding down.
I think I agree. I like the 9 o'clock games. I like them for a couple reasons. First is what you just said. You don't feel like you're rushed getting out of, you know, because I don't like going to the game in my work clothes. I like to go home, like to eat something or to, you know, meet my dad, have a few beers before the game. And for the 7 o'clock games, you know, if I'd leave the office a little bit after 5,
you're chugging to get 3
yeah,
down.
Well, I mean. Look, I've been at this for some time. Right. I mean, I figured out how to handle it. But the other issue for me is that I feel like the 9 o'clock games feel like a bigger event to me. It just does. It just feels like there's a little bit more energy in the room. Energy, aka alcohol, in the building.
Right.
I feel like the fans are a little more hyped. The students are a little bit more hyped, and it just feels like a bigger event.
I thought it was a great atmosphere for this game.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
I thought
yeah.
the place was rocking. It was one of the better atmospheres at Cintas that I've seen.
Yeah, it was the best of the year as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
And I expect the Georgetown game Wednesday to be its match, even though it's a 7 o'clock game, just because of the name of the team. But a Thursday night game, 9 o'clock. Yeah, great. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. It was, you know, it's fun to go to the a little bit later games. The weather wasn't too terrible. So, yeah, I mean, I had a blast at the game, and I definitely like the 9 o'clock games. I think they're but I do understand the, you know, but first of all, we have to both remember that, you know, both of us live, you know, what, 10-15 minute drive from Cintas Center. The people that have to come a little bit longer way, I understand why it's a little bit more difficult for them. And the people that, and you know, when I was a kid, I didn't go to, I mean, my parents couldn't really take me to the 9 o'clock games. It'd be, you know, bouncing off the walls till 1 a.m. on a school night. So I understand that for parents of kids who are old enough to bring to the games, it's a little bit rougher, but I do like the 9 o'clock starts. I'm not a big fan of the afternoon starts on the weekends. And so I'm definitely in favor of more of the 9 o'clock games. And I think the ideal time is like an 8 o'clock start. Like they did for Gardner Webb this year, the opening game of the year on a Friday night. That was a sort of a perfect situation, but yeah, I'm in favor of the 9 o'clock starts. And also if it's a road game, you know, you get to watch the early game, you get to kind of settle in, get to see what else is going on in college basketball. You get a little anticipation before the game. So,
right. Yeah. I'm with you.
It's pretty great.
Well, that brings us to Sunday's game on the road at Creighton. Xavier loses their first Big East game, and really their first loss on U.S. soil, Dan, as their first three came all at the Bahamas. And, you know, they lose this one 95-89. And we're going to talk more about this with our special guest, Brad Redford, coming up later on the podcast. So we won't break it down in too much detail here, but I think the start to this game was just absurd for Xavier. It was, I think for fans, this was what everyone wanted to see, was this team wasn't going to go on into a tough Big East road environment. And I'd say Creighton at Creighton is the toughest game to play in the Big East right now. I know Villanova's ranked higher. I still think Creighton's the tougher placed road trip to go make right now. And Xavier came out raring to go. Martin D buried 5 threes before the first media timeout, jumped out to a 15-3 lead. And, It was a perfect start for Xavier, and honestly, they needed it just to try to match Creighton's ridiculous output that kept up the rest of the game.
Well, I mean, I think we got to start by talking about the elephant in the room, which is that X gave up 79 points to Marquette, who struggles to score. They gave up 69 to Butler, who is not a particularly high-scoring team, in a game that wasn't particularly fast-paced. And then in this game, they shipped 95 to Creighton. Now, granted, Creighton's the best offensive team in the country by KenPom offensive efficiency. But I got to say, I mean, well, let's ask a question. Is there cause for concern with Xavier's defense based on these last two efforts?
Well, this is definitely something I want to talk more about with Brad and get his take on it as well. But I would say, here's the thing. I mentioned it earlier that the guys in the post right now, Stainbrook and Fillmore, even to an extent, although Fillmore is pretty good on defense, he's actually fairly versatile. He moves fairly well. They're different. They're a little more rugged. It's been impressive the way that Xavier's been able to dominate some of these teams and even match, you know, the physical big guys of Tennessee and Marquette because of Stainbrook and Fillmore. But when it backfires is, you don't have Travis Taylor out hedging screens all the way to half court like he was able to do, or running around the perimeter chasing guys the way he was able to do last year. It's a little bit different makeup of your team, and that's kind of a mismatch against Creighton, unfortunately. And I think, you know, maybe next time that there's different wrinkles, maybe Stainbrook isn't able to play as much. Maybe you have to go a little more with even a Jalen Reynolds or I don't know, maybe James Farr, or maybe you go small and Justin Martin plays the four, because it's not like Creighton's playing a big lineup. I don't know what the exact answer is or what Xavier will try to do, but I just think they're not playing terrible. They're giving a good effort. They had a few miscommunications, especially in transition against Creighton. But when guys are jacking 26 footers and there's five guys on the court willing to do it, sometimes it's going to be tough to match up in transition because everyone's just running to a spot away from the basket, it's hard to figure out when you don't want to give up a layup. It's hard to, and that's your first instinct. It's hard to now get out on the shooters and make sure everyone's covered. And Creighton was able to take advantage of that. Hats off to them. I don't think Xavier's playing terrible on defense necessarily. I think Marquette shot the ball unusually well for them. Xavier wasn't great defensively in that game, but again, I thought they were better than average. And against Butler, I thought they were pretty good defensively. I mean, Butler has some guys who made some shots in that one, and that game wasn't played at a fast pace, but it was played at a moderate pace, especially for a Xavier Butler game. So I don't think they were particularly bad in that game defensively either.
Well, talking about X's effort against, you know, this was a game where Xavier played from behind in the second half. They really did chase the game, and they did a fantastic job, I thought, of staying in it. Creighton had answers at every moment. This Creighton team is almost like a team that's built specifically to beat a team like Xavier. They just have so many weapons, so many guys that can bomb threes. And the funny thing about it is that you talk about that. You talk about how good they were, 1.22 points per possession, which is just ridiculously elite. But when you look at the box score, when you compare the statistics down the line, this was not in any way, shape, or form a lopsided game. I mean, the percentages, yeah, Creighton shot a slightly better percentage from twos and slightly better from threes. But X actually had more shot attempts. Rebounding was almost even. Turnovers were even. The big difference in this game was that X missed four front end of one and ones and shot only 13 of 22 from the line. So you have to add on the other four, because those are four shots you don't even get to take. And then all of a sudden it's 13 for 26, and you're starting to see how many points X left on the floor. And if they'd have been able to finish some of those one and ones, especially when Creighton was building their lead late in the first half, you know, maybe X has a chance down the stretch instead of constantly trying to get it to that one possession game and then having Creighton on a parade to the foul line toward the end of the game. But I think this is a game that X fans can take a lot of solace in. It was Justin Martin, as you talked about, hit a lot of threes early, but ends up with 21 points, which has to be a career high. I didn't check it, but Matt Stainbrook, 15 and 11, despite being saddled with some early fouls. Samaje, excellent again, 8 of 14 and 2-point shots, 2 of 3 from behind the arc, 27 total with 5 assists and 4 rebounds. I mean, a lot of guys really played their hearts out in this game. It's unfortunate that X lost. This is the toughest game they'll play on the road. The odds makers had it between an 8 and a 10-point spread, which shows you the respect that Creighton gets for their home court and for the talent they have on their team. So, you know, it's a bump in the road. I mean, obviously it would have been great for X to win this game. That probably would have vaulted them into the national polls, gotten them some props nationally, but it's a learning opportunity. And you know, there's no time to feel sorry for yourself when you got to turn around and play a tough, rugged Georgetown team 4 days later. You wanted to talk a little bit about Doug McDermott, Rick, and you asked me via email whether there was any player that he reminded me of. And I actually had to go pretty far back, but he reminds me of like a Christian Laettner as a college player, in that he's got the inside and the outside game. He's a really accurate outside shooter, but he can get his shot around the goal. He's big enough that he can get around, that he can attack big men, but can step out on the floor and shoot. And he has that knack that Laettner always had in college of hitting the big shot when his team really needed it. And every time X seemed to make a mini run in the second half, push it down to six, push it down to five, he would step up with an and one or knock a three down. And when you look at what this guy has done over his career, you know, he's got over 2,400 points scored. He's got an outside chance of getting to 3,000 for his career, which I think five guys have done in the history of college basketball. As I told you, he's already scored more points in his career than Steph Curry and Jimmer Fredette did in their entire careers, and he's still got, you know, 15 to 20 games left. So this guy's a special player. And yeah, you asked me who he reminded me of. Laettner's the guy.
I like that comparison. A lot of people throw out Zerbiak, which is a natural one, and then obviously the Creighton comparison is Korver. But I agree. I don't think he's as much like either of those guys. We've got to compare him to someone white, clearly. I like Glenn Rice a little bit. I kind of see some Glenn Rice in him for sure when I watch him play. But I think he's going to be a really good NBA player for one. And I also think right now he's on pace to be the unquestioned player of the year in college basketball.
Yeah. And
I don't see any of the freshmen that they've been touting as a legit contender compared to what he's doing right now.
He is absolutely an excellent player. And this Creighton team, you know, the way that this year lined up for them, I know they've lost Grant Gibbs for a little while. Gibbs, a sixth year senior who one of my guys on Twitter reports is actually older than James Harden, is he's a steady hand for them. And last year, you know, Creighton was a team that played more of a conventional style. If you remember, they had a big man named Echenique, who was pretty good, but wasn't great. They played more of a conventional style. This year, McDermott has just gone completely, just gun it. You know, you see the basket, you shoot, and it's had huge effects for them. And having this sort of maybe one of the best teams they've ever had at Creighton coincide with the first year of this Big East Conference is a real stroke of luck for them and should set them up pretty well going forward, even if they do take a step back after McDermott and Gibbs are gone.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. They're really good even without Gibbs on the court the other night, you know, I mean, or yes, Sunday afternoon. So, I think that this is going to be a really tough game when they come back to Xavier, but I do think there are some things. I don't think it'll be necessarily the same exact game. First of all, Ethan Rogge, that's what he does. Like, he shoots threes, so you can't say he's not going to do that again, but he was hitting some ridiculously deep, unconscious-type shots with hands in his face. So you hope he's not quite as hot next time. But again, I think maybe you look at playing Stainbrook a little bit less. You go a little smaller if you have to, and you switch screens a little bit more, which we saw them do in this game some to avoid them. They're never really penetrating, using a ball screen to penetrate and get to the rim. They're almost always doing it to create space and get your big men out of position, which is what they kept doing to Stainbrook. He'd hedge a screen, and then it took him too long to recover to the backside when there were two shooters lined up on the perimeter. So that's basically when they got Xavier in the half court and really out-executed him, that's what was going on, is they were able to get Stainbrook out of position more often than not.
Okay, well, let's look forward to this week's games before we welcome in Brad Redford. Let's talk about Georgetown. This is a team that does not really look like the team that we anticipated this year. I think when you thought about Georgetown coming into this year, you thought, you know, and this obviously is preseason, but you thought, well, you got a team with Greg Whittington, who's a big time scorer. They've got Joshua Smith, the transfer from UCLA, huge body inside. And, you know, they'll build themselves around getting Whittington the ball. And then they've got some nice complementary pieces in a Mikael Hopkins, in a Devontae Smith-Rivera, and a Markel Starks. But that's really not what's happened this year, because they've suffered some big-time personnel losses.
Yeah, they absolutely have, and the hits keep coming for them, because they just lost Josh Smith to an academic issue.
Is he definitely out for Wednesday, Rick?
As far as I know, yes. It's
yeah,
it's,
I know he missed the public game.
But you know, last year, I can't remember who it was last year who had the issue, but they had a similar thing pop up around this time, and he was ineligible for the rest of conference play, I believe. So it was most of the rest of the season. And then Jabril Trawick is out with a broken jaw, suffered in the DePaul game. So, you know, this Georgetown team has had some serious losses. Devontae Smith-Rivera, I'm glad Xavier's in the Big East, so I finally get to talk about Devontae Smith-Rivera as a college player after covering his high school recruitment so feverishly. But, you know, he's actually becoming the go-to scorer that everyone kind of thought he could be when X was recruiting him. He's shooting it really well from the outside, 46.7% on 75 attempts for the year. Three games ago, he dropped 31 on St. John's and hit 6 of 7 threes. So they've got a really good backcourt. Markel Starks pairs with DSR, and I like both of them a lot. They're just not getting much out of their post at all. They're kind of like some of the other teams we've seen earlier in the year before, you know, Xavier just played Creighton and and Marquette, where Xavier is playing these teams that are supposed to be a little more slowed down and rugged and known for their defense, but they don't have the horses inside to beat Xavier up on the glass. And that's the case with Georgetown. Mikel Hopkins is their biggest player right now, going 6'9", 225. Everyone else that they're playing inside is pretty much 6'7", and a little undersized. So I think this is another game where, as long as Xavier completely dominates the glass and Stainbrook goes to work inside, they should be all right.
Yeah, and I think some of Georgetown's problems have been a little bit exaggerated. Granted that they're going to be a little depleted when they come here, but they are still 11-4. They're still definitely on track to be an NCAA tournament team.
Oh yeah, they're good.
They only have one bad loss, which was to Northeastern in a neutral site event early in the season, and then they turned around and absolutely took Kansas State to the woodshed the next night before beating VCU in that same tournament. So there's a couple pretty good wins. They got beat pretty bad at Phog Allen by Kansas, but a lot of teams will struggle to play on that floor. So at 11-4, they enter off a very close win at Hinkle Fieldhouse, a game that was a really good game the other night, very enjoyable to watch. And so this is a game that, you know, it seems to me KenPom saying a 5-point spread. I'm guessing that maybe the odds makers fix those odds a little bit higher because of Georgetown's personnel issues. So I'm going to guess it maybe is a 7-point spread, 6.5, 7. And I probably would say I'd still take X. I feel like this is a game that X will win. I think they're just riding high right now. They're going to be in front of a raucous home atmosphere. So I actually feel pretty good about the Musketeers getting the win in this game.
Yeah, I think it'd be tough to play this one at Georgetown. They are 41st in KenPom rankings. And as you mentioned, he's got them at a 5-point spread. I think this Georgetown team is good. I just think to beat Xavier, if Xavier takes care of business inside and plays their game defensively, they'd have to get a 20-point effort out of both DSR and Markel Starks, because they're just not going to get much production out of their post guys. And to do that against D. Davis and Samaje Christen would be really tough for those guys. So I do think Xavier wins this by 10 or more, to be honest with you.
And then on Monday, Muskies head to Chicago to play DePaul, old friend Oliver Purnell, the former UD coach. DePaul is a team that, again, a team that got a kind of a surprising win at Hinkle earlier. They have the lowest ranking of any Big East team in the KenPom rankings at 132. But here's an illustration of the difference in conference strength. The A-10, which is having a really good year, has four teams that are ranked lower than where DePaul is right now. And in previous years, I think 3 years ago when X went 15-1 in the conference with a team that I think Brad was during Brad's injury season. The Atlantic 10 had 10 teams out of their 14 that were ranked below that number. So it just shows you the step up in strength. And although DePaul has struggled and they are sitting at just 9-8 against a pretty poor lineup, against a pretty poor schedule, I should say, they have shown some signs of life recently. I mean, they played Georgetown very close on the road, losing 61-54. They played pretty close at Marquette, 66-56. They lost pretty heavily to Creighton at home, but that's no shame. And then they win in double overtime against Butler. They will play St. John's at home before they'll play St. John's and go to Villanova before they play Xavier. And so that, I think, gives the Musketeers maybe a little bit of an advantage in that the Blue Demons will have to come back from Philadelphia after playing a very, very good Villanova team on Saturday and prepare for a Monday afternoon game against the Musketeers, whereas the Musketeers will have had, you know, 4 or 5 days of rest. So again, this is a game that I think Xavier will win. You would like to think that they could go up to DePaul, you know, probably not a particularly hostile road environment, and win by double digits. But, you know, any kind of road win in this league, I think, is going to be good. And this is a stretch in the season, Rick, these four games: Georgetown, at DePaul, at Providence, and then Seton Hall at home, where if the Musketeers are going to be a factor in this league race, they really need to win all four of these games, or at least three of them. This is a time period where the Musketeers need to be thinking, you know, where can we bank a couple more wins? Because once you get into February, they're going to be facing the most difficult stretch of games that I can recall a Xavier team ever playing. So, you know, there's a rocky road ahead of them. They've got 8 more road trips in the Big East Conference, just 6 more games at home. So they need to, like you said, they need to treat those home dates as like gold and get those wins, because the road is going to be tough, especially as the season goes on.
Yeah, I don't think this DePaul team is particularly good, but they did just beat Butler 99-94, as we talked about earlier on Thursday at Hinkle. Cleveland Melvin, their long athletic forward, he's got a face-up game to him. He's their top player. He's going to be a tough matchup for X. So we've seen this already. Give X trouble. They're going to have to go out and match up with them. It'll be interesting to see who guards him. I'm sure Fillmore will start out on him, but I think, you know, Justin Martin could draw some of that. But he's a guy that can go inside and out. He rebounds well. He can get the tip dunks. He's really athletic and long. So that's a guy that they've really got to find a way to limit him. And then senior forward Brandon Young's averaging, or senior guard, excuse me, Brandon Young's averaging 14.3. He's likely going to have to match up with Samaje. And I would think that would take something out of his offensive game, having to focus that much on the defensive end. So that'll probably help Xavier in that regard. And I don't think he can match up with Samaje all that well. So I do think Xavier kind of owns them in the backcourt. And overall, Xavier, as long as they play their game, they take care of business here. But this is a game they've got to win.
Yeah. Yeah. So Musketeers with those two games coming up, and I'm sure we'll record our next podcast before the road trip to Providence, which is a week after the DePaul game, or the following weekend from the DePaul game. Rick, one other A10 nugget is the league versus league challenge.
Did you say you've A10?
Heard? A10. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Fordham's not coming to this. Sorry.
What, Fordham UCLA isn't the headline game of the so the Pac-12 Big East challenge, probably going to be on Fox Sports, on the Fox Sports networks. What do you think of this? Just give me your sort of 30-second reaction to this news.
Yeah, now let's not get, you know, this is just I'm they've mentioned that this is coming. I'm hearing it's likely with the Pac-12. I've also heard the Big Ten is thrown around, so I don't think this is finalized or anything like that yet, but I do think you'll see this develop, and this will come out here in the coming months. And this is a big push to help some of the teams with their non-conference schedule out and get them a good game. I like this a lot. I think it has some interesting matchups. You know, Snow mentioned a lot of people, the first thing they're going to think when you hear Pac-12 Big East is, oh, Xavier and Arizona. Snow mentioned on the board that Xavier and Arizona have no desire to play each other, and they've already made that clear if negotiations are going on that they wouldn't play each other. So I don't think you'll see that happen.
Is that common, Rick, in the coaching world, that two staffs would be sort of that uncomfortable with the prospect of being matched up? Because God knows, I mean, Xavier could easily find themselves in an 8-9 game this year in the NCAA tournament and have a 1-4 shot at drawing Arizona.
I don't think it would be any problem for those teams to play each other. I just don't think they want to go at it. I mean, I think if it was a situation where Xavier like needed a national game and needed a high profile, Sean would do them that favor. But with the position these two programs are in, they don't need to play each other, and they do so many things similar. Xavier's kept so many of the things in place from when Sean was here, and those guys are you know, all friendly. I don't think this is a negative thing. I just think they have no desire to go against each other. Well, Dan, I guess it's time to go ahead and bring in our guest for the night. And if he was still a player, we would recite all his statistics. But now he's just a former Xavier player. And now he is a media member, a media mogul in the town of Cincinnati. He's making women swoon all over CentOS. You can see him during the games switching off with Lindsey Patterson. He is Brad Redford, former shooting guard of Xavier. Brad, thanks for joining us tonight.
Rick, thanks for having me.
Brad,
I appreciate all the kind words as well. So thank you for getting women swooning in the stands. Wow, that's a lot.
The 40 plus crowd seems to love you up there. You know, you got that 13 and under teeny bopper that loves like the Bieber Fever. They all love you, and then the 40 plus love you. I don't know about in between.
Oh man, well, yeah, that's what I'm. I guess that's what we're going for. I don't know if I have a choice. I guess
I got to throw in there though that I have never been more disappointed in a CentOS Center crowd. Maybe it was a late night game, a little alcohol flowing through. But for people to have the guts to boo you after missing a half court shot during
what the hell was that though? I've never seen you miss a shot that bad in CentOS Center as long as
I was poor. And you know, I'm used to over the last 10 years taking about 500 shots a game. And like I said, right now I'm putting down the cleats and I'm grabbing the microphone, and people still want me to shoot like I was back in my prime. Things change.
Well, Brad, update us a little bit on what you are up to now. I know the fans are interested to hear what you're doing these days.
Well, I was finishing my master's degree at Xavier last year in sports administration, and I needed an internship to fulfill that degree. So in August, in May, I created a LLC company called Brad Redford Basketball. And the plan at that time was to really run like a 3-month schedule of camps and shooting clinics where I would travel to mostly Michigan, but I would also run stuff in Cincinnati and Dayton and kind of run that through August and also work out myself and get ready to play overseas. That didn't really happen. I ended up having to get a hernia repair done in August. I had some complications with that. And then I recently had some ankle issues as well. So I've kind of put down the playing career is kind of to the side right now. I'm continuing to move full force in my training and coaching career and also trying to do as much as possible on the media side as well.
Well, I thought you did an excellent job there on it was Channel 12. Yeah, with Mike Burke. Yeah, you were on Channel 12 last night. I thought you did an excellent job on Sports Authority there. You broke down this Xavier Creighton game. Tell us, what was your big takeaway from this loss for Xavier?
Well, I love the way that they came out on the road. I mean, to go into a hostile environment like Creighton and then really punching in the mouth at the beginning of the game, making the plays they were making, it was awesome to watch and to see. Obviously having one of the best players in the country and playing against a really good team, they're gonna come back a little bit. But I was proud of the way the guys played. I thought defensively, David could have done a much better job in transition. They really weren't matching up to shoot as well. I think part of that is they were looking so much to McDermott. I think other guys were getting lost a little bit. But I think ultimately played a pretty good game, lose to a really good team who shot the heck out of the ball. But I was happy with the way they fought and the way that they got back in the game at the end.
Brad, when you look at the Xavier team so far this season, one thing that Rick and I mentioned was the fact the Muskies gave up 79 points to Marquette, not a great offensive team on Thursday, and then obviously they shipped 95 to Creighton. Do you have any concerns about the defense? I mean, you mentioned some issues with picking up shooters in transition. Is there anything that you're seeing as far as what X is doing defensively that gives you any cause for concern over these last few games?
No, I think defensively, those are things that Coach Mack will definitely clean up. They're scoring the ball at a much higher clip than what we were doing last year. I think they're over 9 points a game, averaging 9 more than we did the previous season. So they're playing a little bit faster. They have, guys who are pulling shots maybe a little bit quicker. I think they're playing more possessions defensively than they did in previous years. That's something they'll definitely key up on and share up in practice as they move forward towards the end of the season. But they got to put the ball in the hoop, and they're doing a heck of a job at that. Now it's just really shoring up the defensive side of the ball. And, against a team like Creighton, the transition side was the biggest piece for me.
Brad, obviously last year you got to see Samaje's freshman year up close and personal. I mean, basically he learned most of his moves from guarding you. I know in practice from what I saw.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. Thank you for sharing that with everybody.
Yeah, and so I was just wondering if you could share a little bit, what's the biggest difference in his play right now, this stretch of games we've seen the last 3 or 4 or even back farther than that, where he's just been dominant but also showing great feel and how to get his teammates involved and when to be aggressive and when to defer? What's mm-hmm. the biggest difference that you've seen from him?
It's just his patience. I mean, he's really allowing the game to come to him. I think, last year being a freshman, I mean, he was our go-to guy. There was no doubt about it. But at times, he forced some things, not really anything he was doing wrong. It was just, he was our guy and he wanted to make things happen. I think sometimes he was so aggressive and you could tell when he went through a game, he was getting shots. And he looked up, 25, it's probably what he got up. But how many shots did he go through now? It's like you look at the scorebook, he's got 25 up. Thing. Like, where the heck did they come from? And I think that's when you really see his progression and growth as a player, it's his patience, allowing other guys to shine at moments. But when it's time for Xavier to pull away or when we get down a little bit, he's making unbelievable plays. It seems like he's almost making the right decision every time, and his assist-to-turnover ratio is out of this world over the last 5 or 6 games.
Brad, over your career at Xavier, you played in the 4 seasons you played, the 2 before your injury and then the 2 after. Each particular year, the Musketeers really had a different, like, alpha dog. I don't think people realize that, you know, you're as a freshman, you're on a team with BJ Raymond, who was sort of the leader of that team. As a sophomore, you were playing with Jordan Crawford. Your junior year eligibility wise, to Holloway, and then this past year with Samaje Christen. Where do you put Samaje? Like, how would you contrast his style with those other guys that sort of were the team leaders in previous seasons?
In terms of his play or in terms of his leadership, it's kind of a both.
Kind of both, yeah.
I haven't been around practice as much as I would like to recently, but he seems to be getting more on the vocal side of things, which is really good to see. He's really like the youngest leader, that has been the star. Like BJ was a senior. JC, although he was a sophomore, played a year at Indiana and sat out for a year, so there was a lot of familiarity. But for Samaje to do what he's done this early in his career is pretty unbelievable. And, you know, more than any of those guys, he's the best finisher around the rim that I've ever seen. His ability to get to the basket is unbelievable. I mean, he does it completely at will. JC and him, I would say, are a little bit similar, but JC had more of that perimeter prowess and you know, would deal with more step backs and get you off balance to shoot a 15-footer. But he's a different player, but he's right up there with every single of those guys that you mentioned.
Brad, also, you know, looking at some of these young guys, we've seen James Farr come a long way this year. What type of transformation does a guy like James Farr go through from last year where he can't even get off the bench to this year where ultimately he hasn't changed much as a player? But what's the big difference in terms of his play, do you think?
I'm proud of James in the way that he's really come back this year and just improved his confidence level and his want to play every single day. When you come in as a freshman, there's guys in front of you that kind of beat you up, and you're learning so much. I mean, your brain's going at all speeds, and so is your body, and it's just trying to get everything to slow down. I think for James, the defensive side of the ball especially slowed down for him. He's not thinking as much about that stuff. He's more concerned now with playing. You know, he understands that he belongs here and to play at this level. Going through that stage right now where it's like, you know, now he's got to compete every single day and he's got to be ready to play every single game. He's got to continue to push through over these next few months because, similar to him and Miles Davis where they really played well early, now they're getting through the dog days a little bit where, you know, your body starts to get a little tired. Everybody's got aches and pains. They got to stay as fresh mentally as they possibly can here in the stretch.
Hey, Brad, I wanted to ask you about, I think people know that you're sort of a legendary gym rat over your high school and college career. And I remember, 4 years ago, I was up at the infamous clock game at Hinkle Fieldhouse, and me and my dad were sort of wandering around the building 90 minutes before the game, and you were the only guy out on the floor. And I just remember it was so obvious that you were just checking the sight lines and where the light was coming in through the windows and everything else, just to familiarize yourself with every point on that floor. And it was almost like an NFL kicker before a game, like judging the sight lines for the goalpost. Can you tell people just like what was your day of game?
I would
routine when you were getting ready for a big game.
Yeah, as much as I could. I mean, we always have like a pregame practice usually for about an hour where we kind of get shots up and go through plays. But before each game, I would try and get up early and I would get my own workout in beforehand. So pretty much every single day, I do a routine between 200 and 250 shots, where some of the shots would be, I just mix them up between a stationary, transition off the ball, just to get comfortable. And the biggest thing for me was I wanted to not have that time where I the game where I had been sitting on the bench for a few minutes and not feel comfortable if I had an open shot. So I would just, as much as I could, get in the zone as quickly as I possibly could. And for me, it was that preparation, that 200 to 250 shots, which would take me about 30 minutes. Then I'd get some stuff done in the training room where I would stretch. Maybe ice up a little bit, and then I go through my hour preparation of practice where we go over as a team, and then I would go to the gym early and probably get another, 100 shots up before the game, just a part of our pregame routine. So I'd say each game day I'm getting 300 to 400 shots, every single day. And it's just about visualizing yourself, going out there, making shots. And then on the road, like you said, it's about preparing yourself, getting yourself familiar with everything else that's around you. I'm a very pattern player. Shooting the ball is one thing where you always want to be mechanical and robotical. I just, whenever I had an opportunity, I wanted to be as prepared as I possibly could.
Well, and that's good stuff for our younger listeners, too. So I think this is as good a time as any for you to go ahead and plug. How can families and younger shooters get in touch with you if they are looking to train? Are you still doing lessons right now, and where should they go if they're interested?
Okay. Yeah, I am currently still doing lessons, and over the last 6 months, I worked with all levels, so high school, grade school, college-level players. They can get a hold of me through my website, bradredfordbasketball.com, which pretty much outlines everything that I do from an individual, group, team session. And I also do travel, and I run shooting clinics, I run these two-day clinics where we just focus and fine-tune shooting and just kind of give people, workouts that they can do and just give them a better understanding of how they can get in the game and immediately try and get into their zone. But bradredfordbasketball.com, all of my information is there. I have email, phones on there as well, so feel free to call if interested.
All right.
Hey, Brad, I got one more question for you. I'm not going to let you get away with this one. Okay. I want to know three things. First of all, the most memorable game you played in at Xavier, the best home atmosphere you can remember for a game, and the place on the road that you played that you thought was the best atmosphere.
Okay. I would say the most memorable game for me, aside from the NCAA tournament games, because all of those, I guess, kind of like were all unbelievable. For me, senior night when we played St. Louis last year was a really special moment for me after kind of going through all the injuries that I've been through and having all of my family in town for that game. And then we were able to beat a top 25 team, and I had a good game as well. It was a special moment for me to be in front of the crowd.
Yeah, you blocked Jordan Jett's shot in the overtime.
Yeah.
The roof almost came off.
I didn't show you guys any of my athleticism during that 4 or 5 year stretch until the last minute. But I wanted to make sure before I left the crowd, you guys understood I had just a little bit of athleticism in my body. Best home atmosphere. I loved all the Dayton games. Man, anytime Dayton came into town and we won every game, obviously at home, those were so fun. I mean, I remember, I think my freshman year, we got into that little altercation at half court before the game. I've always enjoyed having Dayton come into the Cintas, and you always know you're going to pick up a W, so it's a fun one going into that one. And what was the final favorite away arena?
Yeah.
Well, I'm an old school type player, so I always loved going to Hinkle and playing at Butler. It was something different. They don't have all the bells and whistles of a big time, I guess, or a newer arena or newer facility. But I love walking in there and the history of that place. This reminded me of playing back in the 70s, and one of my favorite movies is Hoosiers. So I was hoping Gene Hackman was going to step in and be at the sideline in one of those games, but that never happened.
Yeah, maybe he could have worked the clock.
Yeah. All right. Gene Hackman, I think Jimmy, actually my parents sat next to the original Jimmy.
Bobby Plump, he played at Butler.
Yeah.
All right, Brad, you've been more than generous with your time. I appreciate coming on the Dayton and Victory podcast. We'll have to get you on before postseason play, maybe. That sounds like a good time.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me on. You guys have a good night.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brad.
All right. Well, we definitely appreciate Brad coming on the show. he's a pretty funny guy. He's pretty good at this media stuff.
Yeah, we got to get him on more often. I mean, he probably ought to at least take some of Snow's touches in the rotation.
Without question.
So, Rick, a couple big games this week. Certainly Wednesday night, a huge atmosphere. Georgetown and Marquette, the type of teams that we were anticipating enjoying watching Xavier play this year at the Cintas Center. So it's a good couple of weeks. I said this on Twitter a couple days ago. This has been about as good a 5 week period to have a Xavier season ticket as I can remember, just because of the pileup of interesting games at Cintas. Even some of the bye games were pretty interesting. Bowling Green and Evansville both being real tight games. So it's been fun. The Muskies are going to have to prove it on the road, as we've talked about at some length. But man, banking a home win against Georgetown would really ease things along. So that game Wednesday is huge.
You know what I like, Dan? I like being able to just watch the college basketball games that I'm going to watch, because I'll watch however many games I can fit in a week. I'll watch, but I only have to do that to do my research to write these articles for the pregame articles. Last year, I'd have to watch all the games I'm going to watch and then go online to find web video and stats for all these A-10 teams. So that's what I enjoy about the Big East most.
Well, you know, and another thing is that atmosphere at Creighton was obviously unbelievable, but that's not the last one of those atmospheres Xavier's going to walk into. I mean, really,
they won't be playing in any high school gyms.
I made this point somewhere, of the arenas in the Big East, the only ones that are actually smaller than Cintas Center, which is a pretty good size facility, is Hinkle, which is just a few hundred less than the Prudential Center where Seton Hall plays. Every other team in the league, now granted Villanova and St. John's and Georgetown, have smaller on-campus arenas where they play some of their games, but all those teams play their big games in NBA arenas. So Xavier's going to be visiting some big-time atmospheres over the next few months as they head into Madison Square Garden, the biggest stage of them all for basketball. It's pretty awesome. I've enjoyed this Big East experience so far. Now, after 5 out of 7 on the road, I may disagree, but looking forward to seeing this Georgetown team on Wednesday, and then watching the Muskies hopefully try and get some work done at DePaul and Providence.
Well, there you have it for the James Posey / Adam Simons edition of the Dan and Victory podcast. He's Dan. I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.